You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Live across Wisconsin on Civic Media, you're listening to Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, powered by Up North News. Now, from our Lake Wissota studio, here is the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
Good morning. It is 7:06. Nice to have you here up north on this Wednesday morning. It is July 16th, 2025. Parker Olson is our producer down in Madison Studio A2, and we will hear from meteorologist Brittany Merlot on the way as well. Coming up this hour, we'll be talking to State Representative Christian Phelps from Eau Claire in our homeroom segment, where we talk about education issues in Wisconsin and the ticking time bomb that is awaiting Wisconsin taxpayers when it comes to the voucher school program. It's already costing nearly $1 billion a year, and that's with a cap on enrollment. That cap is supposed to go away. What happens then for state taxpayers? We'll talk about that with Representative Phelps coming up. And in our next hour, the new chair of the Democratic Party of Wisconsin, Devin Remiker, will be along talking about an event that's taking place tonight in La Crosse in the 3rd Congressional District, so that folks in the 3rd Congressional District can finally talk to somebody other than their missing congressman about the cuts that their congressman is supporting for Medicaid and health care programs and a host of other things to pay for tax cuts for the very wealthy. While we await Ms. Merlot and the forecast, a reminder that you can join us here by using the comment sections either on Facebook or YouTube or on the Up North News Facebook and YouTube pages and the Civic Media Facebook and YouTube pages. You can also use that Civic Media app to send us your texts and comments and questions as well. For example, Rob does that from Tigerton every morning. He says, good morning from Tigerton. Sunshine and 65 degrees. Really? Because it is like super overcast over here. So not so much in Tigerton. He said, yesterday I had 6 lawns to mow in Tigerton, drank a lot of Gatorade, took plenty of breaks, and it tired me out. I fell asleep on my recliner. Yesterday was the 45th anniversary of the 10 tornadoes in western Wisconsin around the Chippewa Valley, with 3 deaths, 27 injured. I watched the old WEAU TV reports on YouTube. Yes, that July 15th, 1980 is a date that is seared into the memories of anybody in the Eau Claire area. And I mean, somebody got a picture of the wall cloud that was coming and the straight line winds that front brought along, and just did immense damage all throughout the city of Eau Claire and just outside the area as well. So yes, that did indeed get mentioned by a lot of folks around here yesterday. Rob goes on to say on YouTube, I love weather history. And when I was a kid, I would track severe storms with a road map in the direction they were moving. And that's how I got to know geography and math, by tracking storms. He says, I'm looking forward to the cooler and less humid weather. It will have a fall feel great feeling to it, mowing yards. We talked about Sean Cassidy in our last segment, and he said he remembered seeing Sean Cassidy on Tiger Beat magazine. And of course, he and Parker Stevenson and others who were starring in the Hardy Boys, Nancy Drew mysteries that were on ABC. Oh, and then Rob adds here on YouTube, clouds are moving into the Tigerton area as we speak. So there you go. I saw Brittany come up. I think she had a little connection issue. So let me go back and get her state forecast at least, because, well, I mean, stormy is the main thing to share there, that there will be soaking rain across the state. And then there will be some thunderstorms. There's the potential for flash floods. And then there is cooler air behind it. Her forecast for today says cloudy and cooler. Strong or even severe thunderstorms are possible, along with heavy rains and flash flood concerns. Highs will only be around 60 up north, low 80s in southern Wisconsin, a northeast wind at 10 to 15 miles an hour. For tonight, the rain moves out. Lows will be in the mid-40s up north to the 60s down south, and a northeast wind at 10 to 20 miles an hour. The radar right now shows a very large area of rain, a few thunderstorms embedded in there as well, taking up basically the entire eastern half of Minnesota, and it looks like it's just starting to roll into western Wisconsin. And the funny thing is, I mean, the system is curved pretty much like the Minnesota-Wisconsin border. So, I mean, it is quite literally moving into all of western Wisconsin pretty much at the same time. So keep an ear on your local civic media station for the forecast details. And again, Brittany and others will be following that, especially when it comes to the potential for severe weather that could be in the forecast for today. Parker, you like balloons? We all like balloons, right? I mean,
sure.
They're sweet little innocent things,
yeah,
right?
I mean, when you were a kid, Pat, did you ever get a balloon and it was like, it has a bunch of air in it and it hits the ceiling?
Yeah, yeah.
Would you ever wait for it, like over a course of like a couple days or week or whatever, for some of the air to like escape from the balloon or however it works? And then
that's how it works. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
I'm not a scientist. And I'm not Brittany Marlowe. Come on. And you get it to the point that it's just kind of like floating around like eye level.
Mm-hmm.
And then you just fly it around the house with the windows open or something.
Can you play the mystery music for that? And we'll describe this some more, because that's the vibe I'm getting from this as you're describing.
Okay, so what it is,
just
Pat.
Watch a balloon as it's come off the ceiling, but it's not to the floor yet.
No, it's not. It's just, it starts to kind of hang. What we would do when we were kids is we would take like tape and paper clips to weigh it down so it wouldn't be on the ceiling. And we'd just like open the windows and fly them around the house.
Your science teacher then teach you all about ballast and how that all worked?
This is just a family thing that we did.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, I bring it all up because of power outages that are being caused by Mylar balloons. One most recently in the Milwaukee area led to some 2,000 customers being without power in parts of Walker's Point, Lincoln Village, and Bayview. And it was hours and hours before the power was restored. There were balloons found tangled around We Energy's equipment. A lot of folks release balloons to honor lost loved ones or special occasions. But according to a story in the Journal Sentinel here, at least 10 states along the coast, like Florida and Delaware, have passed laws to ban the intentional release of balloons. And Milwaukee area state senator Tim Carpenter has introduced a bill as well to prohibit the release of 10 or more Mylar balloons. If you do that, it constitutes littering, and you could face a fine of up to $500. We Energies estimates that 120,000 customers have experienced power outages over the last 5 years from Mylar balloons that run into power lines or equipment and short them out. I did not see that coming. That many people have had their power knocked out by balloons.
I didn't see coming that you could get a fine for releasing balloons.
All right. Well, you can't. It's in Wisconsin, it's not yet. It's a bill that's been proposed by Senator Carpenter. But in several other states, they've already passed that law.
Huh.
So, you know, consider other things. The other thing that worries me, you see this especially at weddings, are those, I don't know if they're called lanterns. Essentially, it's like a little candle in a paper bag, and then they attach it to a balloon.
Sure, yeah.
And then these little tiny things blow away. And it seems innocuous enough, but then you worry if it's just dry enough and it lands in a field someplace.
Yeah.
And what it can do. So I feel like you need better substitutes for some of these things. There's got to be ways that you can do something that don't involve, you know, flames or things that can cause power outages for thousands of people. I think about, like, for our wedding, you know, and again, we're going back almost 40 years now, but back then people were still throwing rice, you know, at the bride and groom. Like, it's almost like confetti, you know, prehistoric confetti.
Sure,
that's what we'll call rice.
Yeah.
And we were like cutting edge for our wedding. We said, no rice. You got to throw bird seed. You get the same effect, but then at least it's safe for the birds as opposed to them eating the rice and causing, you know, death and destruction and everything else. So throw rice or throw a bird seed instead. Throw birdseed.
I like that you completely just explained why you shouldn't throw rice. And you're like, yes, I'll throw rice.
So throw birdseed. What we didn't count on was that...
How many birds would appear?
No, it was 96 degrees that day when we got... And we were already glistening, shall we say, standing outside of the church. Yeah. And the people are kind of throwing their birdseed. And it so much of it just stuck. And all I want to do now is, once again, 39 years later, is apologize to the housekeeping staff of the Motel 6 in Appleton, where we went after our reception was over, because I'm sure that cleaning crew went in the next day, knowing that there were honeymooners staying in there, and there was birdseed everywhere. Because we got to the end of the day, we'd been outside, we get hit with the birdseed, and then we polka dance for like the next 7 hours or something like that. Get to the hotel about midnight, and as we're, you know, getting set for the end of the day, we're like, how much birdseed was stuck to us all this time that we did not even know about? So
it's in
I don't know if they're still throwing birdseed. There's days I still feel like I could, you know, reach back behind my ear and something, oh, look, here's a little bit more. It was not our best. It was still a better idea than rice.
Yeah.
But it was ultimately not maybe our very best idea that we could have come up with.
But hey, you made a heck of a memory.
Here's the thing. Nobody is writing a bill to say you can't do this anymore the way they are with the Mylar balloons, okay?
True.
So we've got that going for us, which is kind of nice. Let's see. The Emmy nominations came out that I wanted to lay out there for folks. Severance. Do you watch any of the Apple TV things, like Severance or Shrinking or any of that?
No, we only get Apple TV for the free trial when the Brewers get stuck on there for a night.
Okay, good. Severance, 27 Emmy nominations. And The Studio led the comedy nominees with 23. Apple TV had 79 nominations overall. Shrinking added to that total with 7 more in the comedy category, including acting nominations for Harrison Ford and Jason Segel. Now, I've not watched Severance or The Studio, but we have watched all of Shrinking, and I cannot recommend that highly enough. It is really funny. It's a good show. Over on Disney Plus, Andor got 14 Emmy nominations. I hear a lot of people talk about Andor.
I talk about Andor.
Do you talk about Andor?
You
follow it pretty regularly?
I was a big fan of Andor, yes. I wish that there was space in the timeline for there to be another season, but there's not.
Oh, because, yeah, it's only a certain segment of before.
Like, the universe is limited and before what? Yeah, the time other events.
Got it. Let's see. So Tony says, Shrinking equals great. Severance equals great. Andor equals great. All right. Well, Tony's watching all the popular stuff.
He knows.
Tony's one of the cool kids.
He's in touch.
There is one other TV news item that I have to share. I don't want to share, but I have to share. When people go, Pat, why do you do what you do? What's with Civic Media, Up North News? Why do you do all these things? Here's why. During the month of June, okay, for the third straight week, Nielsen reports that Fox News Channel, which isn't really news, but whatever, Fox News Channel had more viewers in prime time on weeknights than any of the main broadcast networks, ABC, CBS, Fox, or NBC. That's how many folks aren't getting outside in the summertime, but they're watching a propaganda network that is going to keep me employed as we keep trying to knock down all the disinformation that it spews repeatedly. From the heart of America's Up North, live from Lake Wissota, thank you for making this the place to spend part of your mornings. I'm Pat Kreitlow. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Live across Wisconsin on Civic Media, you're listening to Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, powered by Up North News. now, from our Lake Wissota studio, here is the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
Hey, good morning. It is 7:06. Welcome back. Nice to have you here up north on this Thursday morning, July 17th, 2025. It's a busy weekend. I mean, last hour we talked about, you know, Country Jam here in Eau Claire, Bastille Days in the Milwaukee area, the Hayward Lumberjack Festival. I listed all the various county fairs that are going on as well. And we're still not done. Robin Tigerton reminds us that Pulaski Polka Days is starting. Roger on Facebook tells us the Portage County Fair begins today. Alicia says it's Paper Fest this weekend in Kimberly. So there's just a lot to do here. Rob goes on to say good morning from Tigerton. It's cloudy and 54, got 9/10 of an inch of rain. Severe weather was mostly south of me. Watoma had more than 3.5 inches. Highway 21 was flooded on the east side. He says, I have an eye appointment today in Wittenberg, probably a candidate to wear glasses, and then 3 yards to mow in the Tigerton area this afternoon. He says, I think the meteorologists like Brittany and all in the media did an excellent job with severe weather coverage. It brings back memories of tracking storms on my road maps when I was a kid. Let's see, and he goes on to talk about Nicolette Larson being an awesome singer, also with the Nitty Gritty Dirt Band. And he says, have a fun time, Brittany, at EAA. I hope and pray you have nice weather there. And that takes me over to, oh, wait a minute, we've got Alicia saying, my oldest and I are going to the EAA schedule last night, planning our days. Air Venture is almost here. And on the text line, Jim in Brookfield, have a great time at EAA next week, Brittany. I hope the weather cooperates. I remember flying there from the Waukesha Airport in a four-seater Piper with all the spotters on the ground communicating with us along our flight path. We never had to say a word on the radio until we landed. This is contagious stuff, the way that people feel about Air Venture, and count Brittany among them.
I am definitely one of those. I had no idea what it was the first year that I went, and all it took was one day, and I was hooked, honestly. I'll suggest, on if you want to go on a day and you're wondering which one, because there's just so many, Wednesday and Saturday, they have a night air show, and it is one of the biggest that I have ever seen. And they've got the drones doing their things. They have a special ending with some explosions. It's amazing.
The good kind.
Yes, the good kind, the planned kind.
Yes.
So it is just a super fun time. Lots of people, good people. You'll learn so much. The technology that goes on with these airplanes is outrageous, and it goes beyond that too. So I'm so excited. Camping is going to be so much fun. Just the fact that I have no power, though, is going to be very, very interesting. This is dry camping.
You really rough it for this.
Every single one of us. There's only a few power sites, so we're out there for the good.
So Brittany will be off tomorrow getting ready for that. Hopefully we'll be able to hear from you at a couple of points along the way next week as you enjoy it all. And before we get into today's weather, just letting folks know that Corrine Hendrickson is standing by. We'll talk to her in just a couple of moments. State Senator Jeff Smith at the bottom of the hour. But as mentioned by Robin Tigerton, y'all were busy yesterday tracking something like, 10 or 12 different possible tornadic systems out there. What's the report by the time we get to this morning, looking back at yesterday?
Yeah, yesterday was wild. It started earlier than we had thought. Right around noon in Dodgeville, we saw a funnel cloud and a tornado touchdown that continued into Sauk City, Fall River, Beaver Dam, Fox Lake area, into Fond du Lac, even funnel clouds being reported. And that was around 3:30 in the afternoon, also into Hustisford, Lemon Wire, many, many places dealing with a possible tornado that touched down there. Lots of video, lots of pictures out there of proof. Also, winds clocked 50 to 60 miles per hour, knocking down trees scattered throughout the southern half of the state. And then flooding towards the Fox Valley. Onalaska got 1.63 inches in 1 hour. Just 1 hour. So from La Crosse to the Fox Valley, a good 2.5 to 3.5 inches were reported there. Madison area, about 1 inch to 1.5 inches. But Watoma, cars were reported stalled with water over the hoods. Highway 21 was impassable between Coloma and Watoma. And also Nina, creeks were overflowing, water going into backyards and basements. Same thing into Oshkosh. The EAA grounds are flooded, but they have really good draining systems. But Fond du Lac, Stockbridge, Manitowoc, all flooding situations there. We're drying things out today. Thank goodness. We need it. Fog still in places like Hayward and Ashland. It's about 41 degrees up north, 64 degrees into Racine. It feels like fall. That's going to be the case today. Very crisp, upper 60s to low 70s. Lots of sunshine. And we are looking at tall waves on Lake Michigan. So a beach hazard statement out there. Be careful of rip currents. Otherwise, tomorrow, another little system wants to start bringing rain possible far, far north tomorrow afternoon. And then that line could build and swing south through the state as we go through the late afternoon. Otherwise, a little bit of rain chance does linger, maybe mostly south on Saturday. Sunday, we are looking at a little bit of rain possible south, but northern parts of the state, we're dry all weekend and we're a little bit warmer, upper 70s to low 80s.
All right. Well, Brittany, have a great early start to the weekend. Wonderful time setting up at EAA. And
thank you.
Well, hopefully we'll get a chance to check in with you a couple of times here.
I can't wait. Talk to you guys then.
All right. Sounds good. Let's visit now with Corrine Hendrickson. We've talked to her several times before about the crisis of affordable child care in Wisconsin. Governor Tony Evers tried to, well, he first did use a lot of federal pandemic relief funding to help keep the child care industry from collapsing. He also proposed something in the state budget, but the resulting deal between Evers and Republicans in the legislature fell short in some areas, for example, child care. And in our next half hour, we'll talk to State Senator Jeff Smith about where the budget fell short in terms of homeless care for veterans. But let's stick to child care now and bring Corrine in right now, because Corrine says she finds herself at a professional crossroads, essentially, as a result of what is and what is not in the final state budget. Corrine Hendrickson, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I'm all right. I'm enjoying the cooler weather.
Yes, it's definitely a big relief compared to, you know, feeling like the mid-90s or triple digits or anything like that, especially if you're watching a bunch of kiddos all day.
So. Yeah, we're outside. We're at the park for swimming lessons, and it's been hot. So today, now those poor kids are going to freeze when they're in there.
Yes. Well, look, it is... mostly thankless work. Thankfully, there are enough other parents and folks in the public who are becoming increasingly aware of, you know, the value of this industry and how it is in real crisis right now. But you talked to us, you know, last week about the state budget bill and, you know, how it only provides 1 year of partial relief compared to the governor's original proposal. So now you've had a chance to evaluate things further. And so you were nice enough to come back after having thoroughly reviewed things to tell us what you think it all means for, you know, child care on the whole in Wisconsin and what it means for you personally.
Yeah, so thanks for having me on. What it means for all of us in childcare and the families that we care for and educate and their employers who have those parents employed, is it still going to be a disaster? Cindy, who's up in Green Bay, is one of our WECAN members, and they're calling this program a bridge. First off, it's a bridge to where? To nowhere. But she actually said it's a plank in a pond payment, because it's not a bridge. It's just one lonely board floating in uncertainty. And that really hit, because it's not what Governor Evers is saying. He keeps saying in these press releases that, you know, this is going to make childcare more affordable. It's not. We are raising our rates. I sat down and did my math. And in order for me not to take a $15,000 pay cut due to ages and the loss of 20% a month, I had to raise my rate $60 a week, which would be $350 for children under two and $320 for two and up. And in New Glarus, it's not tenable. I've lost three children so far due to rates. Two of them were on subsidy. And so last year I struggled to fill my three spots, and it was September. I was starting to think I might have to close, and I couldn't do it again. So I talked to my parents this last week, let them know that I'm not going to be able to, I will not be able to morally try to stay open and try to fill three spots with parents that I'm like, yeah, if I'm still open, you can have a spot. How do I do that to them? How do I do that to their employers? They think they have a spot, but they're not sure. They're going to keep looking, as they should. And so I made the difficult decision that August 29th is my last day. I was able to get the kids that I have here into another group center, because at that time, that's when they have turnover and that's when they have openings. So my four kids are probably going to stay together and they're going to be able to go there. But I am now trying to figure out what I'm going to do. One of my kids on Monday, she looked at me, she goes, Corrine, why don't you get to be a teacher anymore? And that just about broke my heart, because that's what I do. And then another parent asked me, they're like, oh, we're all going to the same place. And then they're like, what are you going to do? And I said, you know what? I haven't figured that out yet. So that's the way that all of us in this field work. We think about the children and families, and then we think about ourselves. And so now I'm trying to figure out what I'm going to do next.
I my heart is breaking for you and for these kids and for these families. And it's not just you. You're not the only provider who's looking at this.
It's all of us.
And making a rather difficult decision. And look, even if there's follow-up legislation, because we talked about how the funding is really only there for 1 year. But as you've mentioned before, that's a lack of security that you can no longer live with. And who knows how many more are only going to be in business for one more year.
Right. And that's the other thing is people, all the providers I'm talking to across the state, they're looking at raising their rates $10, $15 a week, maybe more now to try and keep the teachers they have or the family child care providers. They're looking for second jobs so they can stay open. That is not okay. We work 50 hours with kids already, and then we're supposed to go and work somewhere else so the parents can afford us. This is not okay. And our state should not be making these decisions. If they actually cared about kids, they wouldn't do that. And so, yes, we are still fighting, and I'm not leaving the advocacy world. I actually will have more time, so that could get fun. but we're working on, there's standalone legislation, SB 222 and AB 317. It's the standalone for $480 million to make us whole again. Had we gotten that whole $480 million, I wouldn't have had to raise my rates at all, because it would have covered all of that. And so we're still fighting for that. We're still saying it. And now what we want is our providers, our parents, and our employers to call Governor Evers and call their Dem and Republican representatives and tell them every time, my rates just went up 20 bucks. I just lost an employee because their rates went up. Because that's what it's going to take, is until they see it and feel it, they don't understand. And they don't have the empathy, and they don't have the imagination. And that's not okay either. So that's where I'm at.
You've been asked, to consider, I mean, you're already way out there visible on this issue, but to consider, you know, ramping things up further. I've seen this happen with people all the time. You're an advocate for something and people say you should keep being an advocate, maybe on, even an elected level. Is that one of the options?
Yeah, actually, I am one of the now I think we're down to four potential Senate candidates in SD 17, which is Mark Lyons district. I am thinking about it. I am pursuing a potential run, and I participated in a forum last week and will be participating in more forums throughout the this area of the state that the counties are putting on. And I'm excited that real people are interested in running, because we do need real people who actually have conversations, meaningful conversations and relationships with actual people, instead of staying in their bubble and listening to what all the experts are saying that what is what we need and what we want. And that's how you end up with what we got. There was no transparency. None of us were at the table to say these policies are terrible, they're awful, and do not harm the children. Do not do this to the children. Don't put us in these situations. And for what? A plank in a pond? It's not, you can't run a business that way. And on top of everything that's happening at the federal level, this is only going to just, continue to make us descend into, despair almost. And part of what I like is the hope of working towards something else.
And that's, I don't doubt you'll do that in some way, shape, or form. And please keep in touch on what those plans would be. Corrine Hendrickson, child care provider, soon to be former child care provider in New Glarus. Corrine, thank you. Hope you have a good day.
Thanks.
We appreciate your time so very much. A local update is coming up next for some of you. And then coming up at the bottom of the hour, State Senator Jeff Smith about something else missing from the state budget bill. That's all coming up live from Lake Wissota on the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm Pat Kreitlow. Going to be a busy day on the Civic Media Radio Network, because it's a road tripping week with Jane and Greg and with Todd Alba all on the road today in Oshkosh on Matinair on Air with Jane Matinair and Greg Bach at 9:30. Dick Kapinski from the EAA Museum, because that little thing called Air Venture is next week. So they're getting set for the big fly-in. So, of course, Todd will be broadcasting from Oshkosh as well this afternoon on his show from 2 to 4. And then on the Maggie Dawn show later this afternoon, there will be Dr. Kristen Lyerly with a segment called Broad Appeal during the 4 o'clock hour, taking calls from women about what they are most concerned with right now. And then in the 5 o'clock hour, State Senator Chris Larson. So again, a busy day ahead here across the Civic Media Radio Network, where right now We are going to hear in our homeroom segment from State Representative Christian Phelps from the Eau Claire area. And our subject today, by and large, is about enrollment caps for the voucher program. We'll talk about the state budget as well. Representative Phelps, how are you?
I'm okay. How are you, Pat? Good to see you.
It's good to see you as well. It's been no doubt a busy couple of weeks for you here as a freshman rep with your first state budget, a process that was not typical, to put it mildly, when things plodded along and then suddenly had to race at breakneck speed at the end of it here. So let's cover that ground first. Your overall observations on the budget. You were a no vote on it. So talk a bit about, you know, how you came down that way last week.
Yeah, it was a busy couple of weeks at the end there. It was busy because of a manufactured timeline crisis that Republican majorities could have avoided easily. They know as well as I do who the president is, what federal cuts that president was trying to implement since the day he was inaugurated. And these are the people who had abandoned the governor at the negotiating table partway through the budget writing process. So it was a little bit disingenuous, in my opinion, for them to come back to the full legislature and say, all right, we need to get a deal and pass a budget immediately in order to avoid the Medicaid cuts that the Trump bill is going to implement. That was, you know, true by that point, but it was entirely their fault that it had to be on such a condensed timeline. I come right out of the advocacy world, and so I continue to work closely with teachers and parents who advocate for public schools, as well as sort of issue allies that advocate on healthcare, Medicaid expansion, criminal legal reform, trying to reduce the incarceration rate in Wisconsin, environmental advocacy groups. And they were clear that a budget, especially with close margins in the legislature and Democratic governor, for them to support was going to require certain benchmarks. It was going to require Medicaid expansion, 60% special ed reimbursement at a minimum, and closing the Green Bay Correctional Facility and funding childcare at least at the rate that it's been funded through childcare counts. So like those advocacy groups, I knew that if a budget didn't include those things, I wasn't going to support it. And the budget we got didn't include any of those things. So I voted no on it, and I was pretty consistent in my reasoning for doing that. I thought it was strange that we were being put in the position of suddenly being in kind of a state of legislative panic when really the Republican majorities could have avoided that by just negotiating in good faith from the beginning.
I would let folks know that while Instagram is normally about photos and videos, and you know, there's sometimes just a very brief text that's in there, Christian's Instagram explains again all these reasons why he voted no on the budget. It is laid out in like six little bullet point paragraphs, and is probably the most informative Instagram post I've ever seen in terms of explaining something that's in the news. And you'd find him on Instagram at CS_Phelps if you want to see that. I'm sure you've got it written in other places as well, but it really stuck out when I saw it on Instagram yesterday, Christian.
I'm glad. That's the best compliment a state or local elected official could possibly get, that our social media presence is in fact helping people understand what's going on in the political world.
Without any cute animals required, you know, or anything like that.
You know. Sadly.
It just did. Actually, and it does accompany a photo. Talk about the three other legislators in the photo who all banded together on the snow vote. I know Fran Hong was one of them.
Yes. So, and she's the ranking Democrat on the Education Committee. We worked really hard with her and several other public ed advocates to make sure that our colleagues, including the governor and our colleagues in both parties, to the best of our ability, understood the education components of the budget as well as we could. And then Representatives Clancy and Madison are both from Milwaukee. All four of us are Democrats in the legislature, in the Democratic caucus, and we also caucus, the four of us, in the Wisconsin Legislative Socialist Caucus, and try to always analyze everything through the lens of an advocacy perspective. And one of the things that I say is that we all believe that healthcare, housing, food, and education are human rights. I think we're not alone in that, but we hold each other accountable to the best of our ability to always analyze policies, including the budget bill, through does this policy move us closer to treating those four things as human rights? Not through, is this politically convenient and will this lead to my reelection? And if there's a gap there, we close it through messaging, not through compromising on our principles. And I think that that was a defining way that we looked at this budget vote as well.
So I think I know where you're going to come down on our Sunday morning newsletter question of the week, which is which direction the Democratic Party should go in. The options were A, go left, B, bold, don't be squishy, B was the big tent option, C was far left positions are going to kill the party and drive away moderates, and option D was I'm a Republican with a box of popcorn just here to watch. I see a lot of responses for all the various things. People are putting their hearts into these responses. And I just heard from you right there the heartfelt reason why Democrats ought to embrace either option A or B.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to frame my position as an opposition to a big tent. I like a big tent. Mm-hmm. And frankly, in Wisconsin, as in the United States in general, we don't really have a multi-system governing a multi-party governing system. We have a two-party system, and we are that's the way that our legislature is set up. And so what I have found that people want in the Eau Claire area and among my neighbors is an authentic representation and an authentic candidates who don't try to sort of walk a tightrope trying to keep everybody happy, but instead articulate where they stand, why they stand there, and where those values align with their neighbors. And that's what I spent all year doing last year through a competitive primary and a competitive general election in the Chippewa Valley. I said, I'm very steadfast on these principles, and I think it's because of values that I share with you, urban and rural residents of this region. By electing me, those folks said that they agreed with me on those values, and I think that they want me to be consistent and honest in my way of upholding them. That doesn't necessarily mean an ideological prescription, but it means tell your constituents what you're going to do and why, and then explain it every step of the way. That's what I want to see from elected Democrats moving forward, and I think not doing that harms not only the state and people's livelihoods, but our electoral chances, because people are smart and they can tell when you are hedging on your values.
Oh, yeah. And I could see in the legislature as well, people that I referred to as clock punchers. They came in, they punched the clock, they did the least amount of work possible, didn't talk about their values at all, just tried to get reelected. And it was no fun serving with them, even in the same party. But you see it in both parties, as opposed to everything that you just said, which is what a legislator should stand for. All right, well, let's get back to the topic at hand here. And again, your education advocacy work that you were doing prior to being in the legislature has you uniquely positioned to talk about the issue of enrollment caps on voucher schools, which I am sure, I would dare say 97-98% of people do not know about. They know we have a voucher school program. They don't know it's costing us nearly $1 billion a year and that there's an enrollment cap on it. What is the current condition? You know, what can you tell us about the cap and then how it apparently could go away next year?
Yeah. Thank you for asking. It's true that a lot of people are not really familiar with the gravity of this program. In my work, I've met people, for example, who get elected to a school board. And when they get onto the school board, they and start seeing the books and the budget for their school district up close, that's when they learn things such as the fact that their district is losing funds to the private voucher program. And the reason for that is because the statewide voucher program and all of the sort of increases or growth of that program have mostly happened behind closed doors in Wisconsin. When you look at other states where people have ballot initiatives and they can go to voters through kind of a democratic process to say, do you want something like this or a referendum on vouchers, they always fail. People don't like the idea of spending public dollars on an unaccountable private school system. We've seen it fail in places like Arizona, Kentucky. We've seen very Republican legislatures in places like Idaho reject this idea. But in Wisconsin, we've had a voucher program in Milwaukee for about 30 years. And now we have a statewide and a Racine voucher program that Republican Governor Scott Walker put into budgets. And one of the things that was sort of snuck into a Walker-era budget in 2015 was a 1% annual increase in the enrollment cap on that program. So it started at a very low percent. It's now at 10% of a school district's population, student population in that school district, can participate in the statewide voucher program. And the way that's funded is that school districts get whatever amount of money is agreed on in the budget from the state. And then the first thing they have to do is take some off the top and send it to the private voucher program. At that time, they lose all of their oversight over those dollars. They don't know which students are getting it. They don't know what the schools are going to do with it. And they have no real way to find out. And that number has been going up by 1% every year since that Walker era budget. And in statute, it says that in 2026, going into the 26-27 school year, that enrollment cap will come off entirely. And this was like a big elephant in the room I saw like hanging out as we were going into this budget process, because we have biennial budgets. This is the last one we were going to pass before that enrollment cap comes off and the balloon pops. And we don't know, there's no way to know how big the program could get. So before the budget, actually, I introduced a bill, Assembly Bill 307, I recommend people look at, to just keep those caps on. Now, I'm an opponent of the voucher program. I think we should sunset it. That was an olive branch. I reached out directly to Republican legislators saying, please sign on to this bill. This is fiscally responsible. We have to buy ourselves some time. But it has not passed. No Republican has signed on. And now a budget has passed guaranteeing a 9% funding increase to the voucher and charter programs. We're already losing about $800 million a year to these programs. And the Legislative Fiscal Bureau has confirmed for me that we really do not know how much this is going to cost the state and our school districts when that enrollment cap comes off in 1 year. So we need to pass that bill as soon as possible. And if you have a Republican state legislator, please reach out to that person and invite them to sign on to my compromise bill to just keep those caps on. Our budget needs that.
And the thing is, in other states, in multiple states, Republicans are becoming aware of this, and they are now supporting putting caps on when they see what it's done to their state budget. So there's no excuse for Republicans in the Wisconsin legislature not to see this and to try to defuse this ticking time bomb before it goes off. Representative Christian Phelps from Eau Claire, thank you so much for spending some time with us on all these great subjects today. We appreciate it.
Thanks for inviting me, Pat.
Our pleasure. And coming up, a local break is next for some of you. For others, we'll visit with Jimmy Cuska and talk about news around Western Wisconsin on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Learn a little bit more about things that you can do across Wisconsin this weekend. Every summer weekend is a great one to see something new in Wisconsin. So maybe put one of these on your calendar. You'll hear about them from Sharita Booker, our social media manager. Sharita, how are you?
Good, Pat. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. There's just so many great options out here that we're going to do. Let's see. The three we're picking today will take us to Northwest Wisconsin, Western Wisconsin, and then down to Southeast Wisconsin. Let's start with the one that got going yesterday, and that, of course, would be the Lumberjack World Championships up in Hayward.
Yep, and that'll run through Saturday, and athletes from around the world will compete in 24 events over the 3 days to claim the world champion title. Now, some of those competitions include sawing, chopping, speed climbing, log rolling, boom running, a standing block chop, and more. The festival will also feature vendors, food trucks, the Swinging Axe Beer Garden, and live music. General admission tickets start at $24 for adults and $19 for children 5 through 12. And for tickets and more info on that, visit lumberjackworldchampionships.com.
I would like to call attention to one thing you said there that I did not think would ever happen in my lifetime. What did you call it? The Swinging Axe Beer Garden.
Yes.
Okay. For most of my life, I associated swinging an axe around beer with Lizzie Borden. And now we're encouraging it. Have you ever been to one of those bars where they have axe throwing as a game? And would you take part in it?
I've heard of them, and I would try it out, see how good I am.
Okay. I have been to like the Chuck E. Cheese version of one where, you know, the dartboard is all plastic and it's a like a rubber mallet or whatever. But I have not been to one of the, you know, the ones with the real, the sharp implements. You know why? Because they're real sharp instruments around people with alcohol. But hey, more power to the folks that do it, enjoy it, and come out with all their digits still attached. So lots of fun to be experienced up in Hayward this weekend. Now, meanwhile, in the Chippewa Valley, it is Country Jam time. And I know it's been a little while now, but I always feel like saying again, Country Jam is in a new location because maybe people don't go every year. It was along the river down on the south side of Eau Claire for the longest time. And now it's got brand new digs up in the northwest corner right off of Highway 29. What are folks going to see at Country Jam this weekend?
So it'll kick off with the lineup that includes Bailey Zimmerman, Chase Rice, David Lee Murphy, Josh Ross, and Kaylee Bell. Friday's lineup will include Cole Swindle, Dylan Scott, Sarah Evans, Mark Chestnut, and Casey Ashton. And Saturday's lineup will feature Sam Hunt, Jake Owen, Craig Morgan, Dylan Marlowe, and Tiger Lily Gold. There will also be food trucks, craft beer, whiskey bars, and more. And one-day general admission tickets start at $119, and a three-day general admission ticket starts at $179. So to grab your tickets and get more info, head to countryjamwi.com.
Yep, this is all at the new Eau Claire Event Center, where there are plenty of other things that go on there as well. Lots of room for camping and more. So a lot of folks coming to the Chippewa Valley this weekend for that. Let's go down to the southeast corner of the state. Another one of the big festivals that takes place in the Milwaukee area. It is time for Bastille Days.
Yep, Bastille Days is kicking off today. And that festival is one of North America's largest outdoor French festival, which also is free and attracts over 250,000 visitors each year. There will be live music, an international marketplace, French and Cajun cuisine, and a signature 43-foot Eiffel Tower replica with hourly light shows. The annual Storm the Bastille Days 5K Walk or Run starts tonight also at 9 p.m. and will wind through downtown Milwaukee's historic Third Ward. Registration for that is still available, and it's $40 for a ticket. And you can just head to easttown.com/Bastille-Days/ to get your registration ticket.
There you go. And again, as somebody who was just down there for Summerfest, I can tell you that there's so many other festivals besides that in that area. And Bastille Days is without a doubt one of the biggest and one that is most enjoyed. So that on top of all the county fairs and other things that we've been talking about this week. So you got no excuse to sit on the couch this weekend. Sherita Booker, thank you so much for running those down. We'll talk to you later.
Talk to you later, Pat.
And by the way, so many fairs and festivals, including Barron County Fair up in Rice Lake, the Dane County Fair gets started today at the Alliant Energy Center, county fairs for Fond du Lac County, Greene County, St. Croix County, Trempealeau County, Waukesha County, the La Crosse Interstate Fair, all happening today. You got no reason to be a couch potato. Well, from the Washington Post yesterday comes evidence that, as a lot of us suspected, President Trump, having gained the reins of power once again, is setting things in motion that could enable him to hijack the 2028 presidential election. The U.S. Department of Justice, according to the Washington Post, has hit states, including Wisconsin, with broad requests for voter rolls, election data, and more. Election clerks from both parties that have already been facing harassment and lawsuits over Trump's lies about the 2020 election are worried about efforts to examine voting machines and more. Now, keep in mind, the U.S. Department of Justice has always been a quasi-independent entity. It's now being used in a way that our founders always feared could happen, which is why you had that bit of independence, being used by the President of the United States for political harassment. And the U.S. Department of Justice has now taken the unusual step of asking at least 9 states for copies of their voter rolls. They went to a mix of Republican and Democratic-controlled states, and Ann Jacobs, chair of the Wisconsin Elections Commission, told the Washington Post she worries the federal government, through Trump, could try to use the information to justify new rules that would make it harder to cast ballots. She notes that, you know, the sloppy use of this data could result in inaccurate matches that would give election skeptics a reason to tout exaggerated claims, or shall we say lies, about ineligible voters appearing on the rolls. She says that voters deserve answers about why the administration wants this information and what they plan to do with it. She says, is this a backdoor way to get access to data that the statutes have said they're not entitled to have? The administration's efforts, fueled by Trump's ongoing claims that the 2020 election was somehow stolen, have been rattling officials from both parties. They feared that the administration could try to build a national file that includes personal information about voters, or that they could impose rules that would boot eligible voters from the rolls and make it harder to cast a ballot. That's happening right now in the Trump administration in the United States of America. Here's something else that President Trump is doing that has an impact on Wisconsin. There is going to be an opening on the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals as Diane Sykes moves to senior status. But from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, Lawrence Andrea and Dan Bice say that unlike most of the time when Wisconsin's two senators, Republican Ron Johnson and Democrat Tammy Baldwin, work together to provide a list of potential nominees to the White House has moved off on its own and has already been conducting interviews for that seat on the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals. Sources tell the Journal Sentinel they've interviewed a handful of conservative candidates on their own before Johnson and Baldwin's offices could vet, interview, and submit names to the White House. At least five have traveled to Washington, D.C. to sit down for interviews with White House staff in mid-May, according to multiple sources. Here's what a White House spokesperson had to say. We welcome the feedback from outside groups, but the final determination is from the president after consultation with senior staff. We welcome the feedback of outside groups, you know, like Congress, like the United States Senate. To them is now just an outside group. Now, should we read anything into any of these candidates? Well, one of them is currently representing former Dane County Judge Jim Troupas. Where have you heard that name before? Oh, yeah. He's facing state charges in the fake elector scheme from Donald Trump back in 2020. And by the way, the Trump administration did not review and interview any currently sitting judges. Oh, but wait, there's more. This one from Wisconsin Public Radio. Do you remember the Superior refinery explosion from 7 years ago? Well, the next Trump budget is coming, and it proposes to eliminate the agency that investigates things like the refinery explosion in Superior. And yes, we are talking about a new budget bill. The thing that passed a couple of weeks back was a budget reconciliation bill for the current year. But a new federal budget is required for the next fiscal year, the one that starts on October 1st. And so one of the first items being reported about Trump's new budget plan is the elimination of the U.S. Chemical Safety Board. That's the panel that investigated the explosion at the Husky Superior Refinery in 2018. It's not the first time, Wisconsin Public Radio notes, that Trump has proposed getting rid of the agency, but Superior Mayor Jim Payne told WPR that would be a mistake. He said that if the Chemical Safety Board had been better funded 10 to 15 years ago, they might have been better able to educate the refinery in Superior about how to prevent the explosion that ended up happening. Had that been prevented, not only would people not have been hurt, the refinery could have saved millions of dollars in the rebuild. These agencies are good for the industry. The WPR report says that in the last 5 years, nearly 500 serious chemical incidents have occurred in 43 states. Eliminating the Chemical Safety Board would save less than $15 million. And of course, it wouldn't actually save money. That money would just go into tax cuts for billionaires. You'll recall that during a visit to Superior 3 years ago to celebrate passage of the bipartisan infrastructure law, President Joe Biden cited the refinery incident when he was announcing funding to replace the aging Blatnik Bridge that connects Superior to Duluth. He said, You know, when the Husky oil refinery exploded back in 2018, that bridge was one that many of you took to get your families to safety. So you know it matters. Yes, it does matter. I just told you a lot of that over the past, what, three, four minutes? I think it would be enough just to say President Trump is eliminating getting rid of the U.S. Chemical Safety Board. It's not exactly something that the industry is seeking, at least not the good actors in the industry are seeking. But that's where we're at. One more. President Trump really stepped in it yesterday, giving fresh material to those who think the 79-year-old is starting to make Joe Biden's mental missteps look like baby steps. The president was raging against Jerome Powell, the Federal Reserve Chair, during an Oval Office press gaggle on Wednesday, complaining. He's been complaining for months about the head of the central bank not cutting interest rates as quickly as he wants them to. Trump said, "He's a terrible Fed chair. I was surprised he was appointed. I was surprised, frankly, that Biden put him in and extended him." However, as the Daily Beast notes in its article here, it was Trump who appointed Powell to lead the Federal Reserve during his first term. And in his November 2017 announcement, the president praised Powell's leadership, judgment, and expertise. Only the best people. Until he's used them up, until they stop being yes men for whatever he wants, which is exactly what an authoritarian strongman would want, and not the way a democracy works best. Today's history lesson is next, as we always do. Mornings, powered by Up North News, live from Lake Wissota on the Civic Media Radio Network.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.